Hey, welcome to the Bear Fruit Show. Super excited you guys are here, where we're talking about failures, success stories, and business and real estate in life. And so we're super excited you're here. We have our guest, Garth Schultheis, with us, who's sharing his expertise in real estate. I look up to Garth in a lot of different ways. And so just appreciate you being here.
Hey, I'm glad to be here for the second try.
Yeah, we're making sure the sound works. So I heard it on my phone. I think we're good to go.
Just have a conversation. We had a great one last time. Just
yeah.
To get to share it.
So. Yeah, so this time we're actually you can actually hear us. So this will be good. Give us a comment, a like, a share. Let us know what you guys think. We want to know. So do you agree, disagree? Do you like it? Do you not like it? But we want to know. So so Garth, give us a little background on who you are and where you come from and just why real estate. Why have you invested in real estate? Why do you see it as the way to go? And there's the right type of real estate as well.
Right,
so
right. Yeah, I hate to admit it, but I've had a lot of experience, good and bad, in real estate. And but yeah, I started off in real estate with my brother, thanks to my brother, John Stuart Schultheis. We call him Stuart in the family, but he goes by John. Anyways, he's 9 years older than me, so he got me into the business back in Indiana, and we started from there. And so early on with my brother, we actually did a decent amount of multifamily and managed, you know, a couple hundred units. We acquired over a couple of years. One of the 98 units we bought in 94, we ended up here in Durango. And, but you know, I didn't have a lot of, we didn't have mentors, and we ended up, you know, parting ways because he was going to California, and we sold the property we had here. And, when we sold the property, I just couldn't find, you know, I didn't have anybody to show me, the right way to do it. Ended up not finding something that, to 1031 exchange into, which was a big mistake. I would say most, if not all, of my regrets in the business is selling.
Yeah.
Selling real estate. There's like, if I would have just kept that, you know, it's gone up so much, and specifically multifamily income property. I mean, obviously, if you had the capacity to just buy real estate cash and just sit on it and feed it, it appreciates over time. Historically, it's done that, but that's not really practical, you know, and that's how I got burned in 2008, 2009, is owning real estate that wasn't cash flowing or wasn't profitable. And so once I went through that, it was like, okay, and I'm 52 now, and this is around 40 years old. I was like, okay, I got to get back in the game. What do I need to do differently? Because I have my real estate license. I had it since 1997, and that's been a great career and all that. But, you know, that's earned income. I'm looking for passive income as I get older.
I'm looking for passive income, and I'm young. So
exactly. I recommend it. So there's a huge advantage to passive income, multifamily income. So there's a lot of reasons why you want to be in that, or us personally, where we want to be in there. We were talking about this the last time. It's like just looking at what you pay in taxes.
It's crazy.
Move aside, like, if you think you should or somebody should pay more or whatever, put all that aside and say, let's just say, yeah, on average, the last 20 years, you've paid 50 grand a year in taxes. Well, that's $1 million. You didn't have access to. But what if every year, instead of paying taxes, or you could defer, or you cut that in half, and now you have $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a year, $100,000 a year that you could invest in something that's going to 10x over 20 years, or even, you know, double every 7 years, or, you know, you can just do the math and you can see, wow, if you could just, even if you deferred it for 5 years and you were able to set aside $500,000 or whatever, I mean, real estate sales, you make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You can make a lot of money. There's a lot of potential with that. Kyle, you know that, you've done really well. And I've had some really good years. I don't sling a lot of real estate like I used to, because I don't have to. But you know, if simple math would be like, say, like, you know, I'm slinging real estate and I'm making 500 grand a year on it, grow, you know, earned income. Well, simple math is you're going to pay 50% of tax. Now there's some write-offs and stuff you can get and so on, but say it's 40%, you know, it's a lot of money you're giving away. And then I could be making the same amount passively. And if I pay little to no income tax or it's deferred, and I don't pay any earned income tax, right? It's all capital gains, passive income. So you pay actually a lower rate. Anyways, I'm making double what you make.
Yeah.
Let's say I don't pay any tax. You bring in 500, I bring in 500, but you have to pay 250 in taxes.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And you're having to work a lot harder than I am.
Yeah. So there's a difference there. So a lot of small business owners, real estate agents, doctors, dentists, people who, chiropractors, people who are making good money, but then they're having to pay, 30, 40, 50% in taxes and give it away.
Right.
But you're saying there's a way to actually invest in real estate and not have to pay any tax.
And reduce your taxes.
Reduce your taxes.
And it's not about tax evasion or anything, because
it's legal.
It's absolutely legal. And it's incentivized by the IRS code, because as everybody kind of can see what's going on in the world today, at least in America for sure, is we have a low inventory of units, of residential units. We're just talking homes, single family, condos, townhomes for people to live. We're about 2.5 million short in this country because the population has increased and immigration has increased. And those are all good things, but there's been a lack of building because the market and lack of incentives by local governments and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, people still need a place to live. And so if you and I, as we're doing, we're working on deals right now, we can provide housing for people. The government incentivizes us to do that, to own property. Because it doesn't really make logical sense if you say, Kyle, you can buy this $1 million property. And if you're providing housing, this property is appreciating, right?
Yeah.
Every year, historically, it's appreciating. But we're going to let you depreciate it on your taxes. So that's basically what it amounts to. And so the way things are set up now with our tax code is you can depreciate it. And it's been like that for as long as I've been alive, or as long as I can remember, you could depreciate over 27 and a half years. But now, the cost segregation studies have been around, but they've been tweaked a little bit over the last couple of years to where you can even, instead of depreciating that asset over 27 and a half years, you can push it a vast majority of in 1 to 5 years.
Wow.
Of when you just purchased it. And a simple rule of thumb would be like, if I bought something for $1 million, I can do a cost seg study. In the first year, I can have a $500,000 tax credit.
Wow. That's crazy. So you're saying that it's called cost segregation. It's basically accelerated depreciation. It used to be over 27 years.
Yeah.
Now it's in the 1 to 5 years. So if you buy something for $1 million, you can basically you can go in and have someone, what do they do? They go in and they what?
Yeah. Well, you're actually hiring these engineers. They just line item, I'm not the expert on it, but that's why you hire the experts, but they basically, break out line by line, like carpet, roof, tile, appliances, plumbing, electrical, and the different ages of things, and the way that you can depreciate it. So some things you can depreciate over 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And then with this cost seg, where you break that down, it just pushes it all into early on. And what it's doing is it's deferring your taxes, right? It's deferring it.
So you'd have to pay it when you sell it. But the idea is to never sell.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
So turning off this vibrator.
Yeah. So for real estate agents, the key here, and so if you're a real estate agent, listen up, is that you can actually go out and buy some type of multifamily commercial property and then do a cost segregation on it, accelerate the depreciation. And since you're in real estate, you can have that $500,000 go towards your commission checks that you've earned.
Yeah.
Is that right?
So yeah, that's been my experience because we're in real estate. So yeah,
we're in the
real
profession.
Estate agents out there, and you're not leveraging your commission. And what I mean by that is, most real estate agents own a home, and when you bought that, you were able to use your commission either for your down payment or reduce your purchase price by that. Somehow that you were able to leverage that to pay less. you know, because you can do that in the industry. The way Kyle and I have done it and way I've done it over the last several years, I mean, I've used my commission to actually leverage ownership and into properties and without creating a taxable event. But it's a powerful thing that we have at our access to us as real estate agents. And so if you're a real estate agent and you're making your money in commissions as well, which I still do some, yeah. You do a lot of that. So that is earned income. But when you do a cost seg and you have depreciation, accelerated depreciation, that overlaps into real estate commissions. And I don't honestly know if you were a doctor, if it overlaps into your earned income or not. I would like to say yes, but I feel like it's a no. So you'd want to get more confirmation on that.
But it would go towards your passive income that you earn from the real estate, the cash flow.
Yeah, it would reduce or eliminate your taxes for that year, or you know, as that gets applied to your taxes. But that's what's so cool about real estate as a real estate agent specifically is that now that overlaps into my earned income.
Nice.
So it just that helps out. Because I remember, when I took a big hit in 2008, 9, 10, like a lot of people, and then rebuilding, and I bought a little hotel, my first little, when I decided, okay, what do I need to do to create passive income so I'm not work? You know, because I was in survival mode, started a foreclosure business, but I was working 10, 20 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week, and that takes a toll on your health, your family, your life.
Yeah, everything.
You know, and 6, 7 years into it, realized, okay, I need to make a change. Hmm. And how do I do that? And I was like, okay, I remember I used to do this apartments and I'd always had real estate and it was always in the back of my mind, but you know, you get into the sexy selling and making, you know, all these big commissions and stuff. It's kind of like going to Vegas and winning.
Yeah, yeah, saying? Yeah. So it gets fun.
You're like, oh, yeah. It's so hard to not, you know, like, so yeah, when you're a real estate agent and you're in that grind, you're definitely getting the hits where you're like, you want to do it and get the dopamine hits. But you realize, am I going to be doing this like every other realtor till I'm 80, 85? Because you're like, man, that lady or that guy, they need to get out of business. They can hardly walk.
Decline that.
Oh,
we're still on.
Anyways, but if you're a real estate agent, you know what I'm talking about. You've started to figure out, like, because when you first get into the business, you're like, well, I'm gonna kill it, and then you know I'll do a couple deals where I'll make $1 million each, and then I'll retire. But then it's like you do some good deals, and you make 10 grand, 100 grand, this that, and then you pay a lot of taxes. You pay for your kid's school, your kid's braces. And then 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, you're still really not where you could be to retire.
Yeah. So,
or enjoy your life even the way you want to.
Yeah. And what I see and what attracts freedom. Is the time freedom, location freedom, financial freedom. And that's what a couple things. That's what investing in multifamily does. But also with EXP, it allows you to do that too. So we'll talk on that in a second. But
it's a great combination.
Yeah.
Collaboration
of the two. So for me, what I hear you saying is that you were able to invest in multifamily. And because of that, you've been able to create this time freedom, location freedom, financial freedom, and not have to pay generational wealth and not have to pay taxes.
Right.
And if you're a real estate agent, yeah, it's fun selling deals, but you realize after a little bit, I mean, I've only been in the business for a couple of years, but you realize after a little bit is it's just a rat race. It's another form of the rat race. And you're just,
It's a better rat race,
but you're still chasing the next deal. You're still chasing the next piece of cheese. You're on the hamster wheel, and there's got to be a better way. And so I think the better way is realizing that the leverage that you have being a real estate agent and being able to take your commission and invest back into real estate. So tell me how you've done that. How have you done that? Help me understand that.
Well, the deal, I've done it on a couple of deals, several deals, but the best one was where, of course, you have to remember, a note to agents that have even been around, and Kyle is, even though you've only been in business for a few years, but you've been very successful, your clients, not all your clients, but some of your clients become your friends and even good friends. And and can be investors and partners.
Yeah.
And then if you do a good job for people, that's what I started realizing. You realize too, is that some of these people say, hey, you know, I'm looking for an investment. And if you start to do these things, then you actually attract people, because if they see you making money and having a good life, then they're like, hey, I have some money. Can I invest with you?
Hmm.
And so anyways, but as a real estate agent, what I did and what I was leading up to is, because I've been around and then on purpose, I've said, hey, I'm the multifamily guy. I do multifamily acquisitions. So hi, I'm Garth Schulteis. I do multifamily acquisitions. And so then when I meet people and say, what do? I do apartments, you know? So I actually ran into a guy who, you know, he owned 145 units here in town. And anybody like that, I said, hey, well, how's that going? We have a good time talking. We have some common things in our life. And then I always say, hey, if you ever want to sell that, call me.
Yeah.
So he did. And and that's the easiest way. I've leveraged my commission on stuff that was listed on the MLS. And what I mean by that is they were offering 2% on a $4 million deal. I wanted to have, you know, more leverage in there, meaning so 2% was like 80 something thousand. 5% is 200 grand. And so 5%, that gives me that means without having to go out and earn the income, pay the taxes on it, by being a real estate agent and going after a deal that is a good deal, I created $200,000 of real money that I can put back into that property. And we ended up buying that with $1 million.
Hmm.
So we needed the whole $1 million, but I went out and raised 800,000 more, which wasn't too hard. And then with my 200,000, that created some equity for myself. And then on top of that, I ran operations. So, which gave me more ownership in the deal. So you could, but what was so cool. So at the end of the day, that deal, which now continues to make us money, created equity for me because I'm an agent.
Yeah. So you're able to take your commission,
yeah,
put it back into the deal at 250K and be able to, $200,000, and be able to become a equity owner in the property
I could have done it at $80,000.
Yeah. But you created the,
oh, and how I did that, I should explain that. So, I mean, I just wrote an offer, with Garth Schulteis and or signs, because you always assign it to an LLC. And then part of the condition of that was I offered a price and that the condition would be increased. The commission would be increased from 2% to 5%. And then, of course, that can cause issues. The seller's like, well, hey, if it doesn't appraise, then I don't want to pay that. Well, then you put wording in there saying such.
Hmm.
So if it doesn't appraise for what I'm offering you, because that was their concern, they don't want to have to be responsible to pay out of pocket or spend more than they thought they were. So yeah, if it doesn't appraise, then you just pay me 2%.
Yeah.
It's better than a sharp stick in the eye. And I still have equity position in the property, but guess what? It appraised. And I actually knew that because I'm in the market and I knew it would. And you know, when you see a good deal, you're like, that's a good deal. We got to jump on that. And the other one I did was because, which I started telling the story on is, so I knew the owner, he called me, it was an off-market deal. Off-market deals, then you don't have the pressure and mm-hmm. you know that somebody else is trying to come in. So I wrote an offer actually with the same kind of thing, contingent on a 10% commission.
Mm.
And it was a $6 million deal. So that created a $600,000 position for me in that. And then I had mentioned how, if I had to, I would get paid $600,000, pay taxes on that to get the ownership in that particular deal. But if I can stay away from creating a taxable event, then let's do that, right?
So that money just went straight into the deal and you didn't have to pay taxes on it.
Actually, how that particular deal fell into place was I brought in a heavy hitter and it was actually his idea. And I thought that's a great idea. He put down the $1.2 million. What was that? $1.25. He said, I'll put all the money down. Just take your commission. Let's reduce the price by that much. And so that's what we did. But part of that was I negotiated, you know, a 30% ownership in the property.
Hmm.
But so because I had the deal, had control of the deal, he brought in the money, and then that was what we negotiated together as partners.
Yeah.
And, but I didn't have a 600. When we closed, there was no $600,000 commission that I paid. Actually, on that one, I did have a $50,000. I needed a little cash, little operating cash. So that particular one I did. So, but that's a lot less taxes than on 600 grand.
Yeah.
And my, the idea was I always, you know, I wanted to have the ownership. It's not about getting the commission. We can do that all day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, but using that commission and then not paying the tax, not making a taxable event, creating equity that if we hold this forever, you know, that property, and we've been able to refinance it twice now.
And wow. So it cash flows. You didn't have a taxable event on your commission. You have a 30% ownership in it.
Yeah.
And because of the cost segregation, you're also not paying any taxes on your cash flow and on
the next 5 years.
You're not paying taxes on any commissions you earn throughout doing other real estate deals.
Right.
And what was the last thing? Oh, and you refinanced it. So you pulled out the money and you go do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I got, sounds pretty good.
I actually got about $1 million out of that deal on the refinances.
Wow. So sweet.
Plus we get a good cash flow, but now I'm just bragging, but,
no, you're sharing the story. I mean, it's a powerful story.
It's a powerful, I mean, you think about that and, you know, I've talked to agents and, you know, in this about coming to EXP and like, cause there's so much opportunity. And then it's like, it's kind of like, yeah, you made $1 million last year, but, you could have made 1.2 or you could have taken home 1.2 or you could have paid a lot less tax or whatever. And, you know, and actually it's kind of not very wise. Like, well, I don't care. I like where I'm at. Well, yeah. Like when you're making $1 million, you pay $500,000 cash, you still got $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
But why would you not want to do a little bit extra effort, you know, and also try to position yourself to where you're not having to just sling real estate.
Yeah.
And it was actually in Jay Kinder's class. What is that that we take?
The NAEA class?
Yeah, that's a powerful class.
National Association of Expert Advisors.
Yeah, that's with EXP. And that's what, man, that just gets my juices flowing when they start talking about financial freedom.
Mm.
And because they do the math, like, okay, so if you just were slinging real estate and you're doing $1 million a year and you're saving money like most people do and you're putting in your 401k or and investing in the stock market, which not a bad thing. I'm not saying don't do it.
I think it's a bad thing.
How much money, you know, and then if you have retirement, you know, you're not going to put it in something that's 20% return.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's too risky. It's more like 3-4%. And so
at a rate of 3-4%, you have to save how much to be able to retire when
so if you had $1 million, you know, saved and you're making 4% on that, that's 40 grand a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. You and I, we're used to more than 40 grand a year. And I don't buy that BS where they say, well, when you retire, you're not going to need as much money. Yes, you will.
You might need more.
If your house is paid off or not, or if your vehicles are paid off or not. Now you got doctor bills, you got potential, you know, all kinds of
things. You got grandkids.
You got grandkids and you still want to live. You know, anyway, so like, throw all that out the door. Like, you can live off. Who wants to do that?
Yeah.
That is not freedom to me. That's, you know, I want to be able to give to the church I go to. I want to be able to give to the orphanage. You know, I want to be able to give back. I want to be able to build generational wealth for my kids, my grandkids. And I want my wife and I to be able to be free to go and do everything that's on our heart.
Yeah.
And, so that model of like reducing your expenses when you retire and your income, that's not in my plan.
Yeah.
So anyways, going back to that. So if you need $1 million, $1 million will get you 40 grand a year that you got to save up. So just add a zero to that. So now you need $10 million if you want to have 400 grand a year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you're a young guy in 20 years, 400 grand will probably be the new 100 grand, right?
Like, the way the dollar's going right now.
And we used to think like, if you made 100 grand, like you're fine. But I mean, it's, the cost of living is going up rapidly.
Well, the cost of everything is going up. The cost of your groceries. I mean, inflation's at like over 7%. So it's crazy.
And that's what they report.
That's what they're saying. It's probably more
that,
like
they've 10. Oppressed that as much as possible. Anyway, so you're getting the point. So it would take $10 million in savings to have $400,000. And that's just like, that's making the commission, not spending it today, paying the taxes on it and putting it away.
Sounds then, horrible.
Yeah. Well, or you could, go out there, that's the cool thing is you literally, and we're the deal we're working on now. It's exciting because at first, you're like, well, I don't know. Would we have the money? Yes, actually we do. Mm. When the numbers work, it's easy to get that. You know, if you say, hey, we got a deal working on right now with investors, we can, the potential is 10 to 12% cash on cash return. And that's just mailbox money for investors.
Yeah, it's nice.
Every investor I know is begging me, they're throwing money at me to
go do and those do deals. That deal.
So that's a no brainer. And with this model.
Well, so tell me, so back up a little bit. Tell me why you chose EXP as your brokerage, because I think for a lot of people out there, they're probably
Jeremiah Aukerman,
that guy. Well, I'm just curious, like why? Because I mean, you're in a pretty good situation. Like why would you,
I was in the same scenario as a lot of these other agents that we talk about. Like, there's an agent in town at another great, none of these real estate brokerages are bad.
And you should never leave them. Stay there.
Yeah. And if you're slinging real estate and you're successful, you're probably happy where you are. Of course you are, because you're a successful person. But is there a better place? Is there a place where there's more opportunity and a better way to leverage? And so, Jeremiah Aukerman mentored him when he was 14 in the business. And then years later, he got into the business. I recruited him to Keller Williams. Then he recruited me to EXP. And I mean, simply stating, I saw the potential of EXP. And as far as the other income sources, in the stock and the stock buyback and all the potential for it. But, I'm focused on multifamily. And Keller Williams is a great company. I'd been there for years. We had moved from Prudential to Keller Williams. Know all those people, love all those people. And I was happy where I was and content. And all I had to do was one deal a year and it would pay for all my fees.
Right? Yeah.
Well, Jeremiah said, well, that still is kind more of dumb. Than, he just said, that's dumb, man. Because, if all you did was one deal a year, now it's going to be, you get to take, not only have to do half a deal a year if you move to EXP. So it was just really, honestly, for me, it was just like, okay, that's just dumb to spend an extra $2,000 or $2,500 a year.
Yeah.
When you don't have to. And then, there was an office that I had to pay for down there that I never used. I was already working from home most of the time. This is all pre-COVID. And anyways, so, but then coming over to EXP, I was like, oh man, I wish I would have had this 20 years ago. Because the stuff that I'm trying to do with multifamily, I still highly recommend it. And if you come in and sign up with Kyle and I, or sign up with EXP, or even if it's not with us, we collaborate in the business.
Yeah,
and we want to share what we know. People. We want to share the knowledge of investing multifamily. But 20 years ago, I wasn't where I was now. But if I had EXP, because you organically, if you're successful in the business, you organically are going to recruit people, attract people to the business. And I've attracted at least a dozen people without saying, hey, you need to get into the business. They just said, hey, I see your life seems pretty good. Like Jeremiah, he was a kid, come from a tougher place in the world in his life, and thought real estate looks pretty good from where I'm standing. And it was a good choice for him. So I've always been excited about real estate. So I've always said, you should do it. It's actually a pretty good life. I've always on average taken off 6 weeks a year.
Yeah.
So it's better than working in a factory or something.
Yeah.
Or whatever. It's a pretty good opportunity anyways. But if I would have had that 20 years ago, what EXP offers, where you attract people organically, if you didn't focus on that, you're going to attract people. And then from those, you make a passive income from those people that you attract. And then also you just naturally, the way the EXP structure is set up, you get free stock.
Yeah.
So you and I have both received like, well, when our stock prices, they went up and they've settled down.
Well, let's just say when I got in, it was like almost like $9 a stock for EXPI, and it's public stock. So if you're into stocks, definitely check it out. But it was $9 and it went up to like $100 and some.
$159.
Then it split. And it's around 40 something today. Yeah. But I mean, just regardless, you're automatically earning like almost a side retirement. Mm-hmm. Right. And
when that happened, everybody I knew, like including you, that had been with EXP for at least a year, had, you know, $25,000 to $100,000 in stock.
Just like that.
And that was just automatically, you're just selling. And that's the kind of stuff us real estate agents, we need. We need automatic savings, passive income. So when the next market turn down happens, you can go, and all of a sudden, like what happened to me, I lost 80% of my business.
In 2008.
Yeah. 2008, 2009, just that was because I was focused on investors and flippers and so on. You could say, oh my gosh, I need some money to survive this. You could go, oh, look at that. I got $100,000 in my, in stock. And then maybe you would have some revenue share, which is different than profit share. So, because in those years where like companies weren't profitable and you had profit share, well, if there's no profit, you don't
get
nothing to share. But the way EXP is set up is it's actually built in with revenue share, and we have all this huge amount of extra money because we don't have the brick and mortar.
Exactly. And most agents, to be honest, when you're doing deals like with other people, you're either meeting them at the house to show them the house, or you're meeting them at their house to list the house. And there's not a ton done in the office. And when people are looking for real estate, they're contacting you online saying, hey, I want to see this home, and this home. It's just a different world now. It's the Amazon of real estate, the Netflix of real estate. It's the future of real estate. I mean, they're in 20 plus countries and they have public stock, they have revenue share, and you have, you know, great commission split. And you can potentially get that split back when you become an Icon agent. So, I mean, there's just the company is built around agents and their success and wanting them to be successful. It's very outward looking versus like the company's not inward looking. So
yeah.
I think it's changing everything. And if you actually look down and do the numbers, it's a no brainer. And when I thought of it, when I saw it, I mean, there's a ton of great brokerages in town and got accepted at, you know, a handful, but what was nice was that when I looked at EXP, it's like, hey, they're the future of real estate because of the technology, Verbella. But at the same time, you're also doing one activity and you have potential for three streams of income. So you're doing one thing and you can have income through RevShare, which is recruiting agents. You can have income through the EXPI, the public stock. And then you also have just selling real estate in the great split that way. So it just made sense when you look at the numbers, and it's hard. I'm in real estate, so you got to look at the numbers. But at the same time, like, I'm not a huge numbers guy, but when you actually sit down and look at the numbers, it makes sense. And so you got to figure out what makes the most sense for you and your family.
At the end, you know, I know for me, it was more like a pride thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, well, what if I go over there and it flops or I'm not successful?
Well, it's pride. It's fear. People don't like change and all
really
that.
There's really no risk except your pride.
Well, so that's a thing for people.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, do you have anything else to kind of share about that as I look up some of my notes?
About EXP? Well, I was going to say, like, we always use this word collaboration, but it is so true at EXP. There's just a collaboration that I've never had at any other company. Of course, I've had some good mentors and stuff, but at the end of the day, you're competing with those people in your marketplace, and they don't really, you know, there wasn't a lot of profit or stuff that they get from bringing you on and so on. It was just more like the kindness of the heart. You know, they might give you some things that where you can split the deal with them and so on. That was my experience, but you don't get the good deals and all that. Anyways, at the end of the day, I had to build my own business. I had to fight for my own listings. I had to make my own money. But this crazy thing with eXp is that because of the Virbela system and the virtual office that we have, which sounds like a very disconnected, unrelationship type of business, but no, it's the exact opposite.
It's very connected, yeah.
It's very connected, and then they throw the best parties and the best conferences. and then you get to meet these people on an international level that it's easy to stay in contact with.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we're doing business like we've never done business before.
Yeah.
And then I can meet, and then, so those people that you're meeting outside your marketplace, you're not competing with them. So
yeah,
I can find somebody that's doing what I do in LA or in Miami or whatever. And then we collaborate on what we're doing. And then maybe they need, you know, they can offer deals to us and so on and so forth. And of course, referrals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the biggest thing is education, is that you get the people that are, you get the best agents that are doing what you, whatever you're looking for, whatever you want to do, whether it's farming or getting new construction listings or whatever. There's somebody out there in the business that's doing that. And they're doing it at a high success rate.
Yeah.
And they have all the systems in place like that. And guess what?
They're willing to share it with you.
Yeah. And then our online virtual classes, which there's more education than I've ever experienced at other offices. And those other offices, there's good education there, but there's nothing like this.
Well,
it's like 50 hours a week.
150
hours a
week.
Yeah.
Maybe it's 50, but either way, it's too many in a good way. So.
Like a water hose, yeah. Fire hose.
But what I can speak to definitely is coming into the business, being super green, being new, and having an accelerated success, almost like a quantum leap. And I think I would have been good, successful wherever I went, but I think I would have had an accelerated success because of eXp, because of their systems, because of their processes, because of, you know, NAEA absolutely. And all of that.
KV Core.
I mean, there's just so much. Yeah. I mean, it's almost not fair.
Yeah,
in some ways.
NAEA and learning from Jay Kinder and those guys
are killing it.
I mean, they've killed it on national level.
Yeah, number two in the world at Caldwell.
Part of your training on negotiation. You take that class, you get every listing.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
if you put what they teach you to practice, every listing you want, you'll have.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many listing appointments where I've gone up against agents who have been in the business for 15, 20, 30 years, and I beat them out. And it's not anything that's special about me. It's just that I have the right recipe. I have the right systems.
And it wasn't by just because you said I can sell it for $1 million more.
No, I absolutely
that's
not.
The wrong way to get listed.
No, right? Absolutely not.
I've done that a few times. I'll admit that.
So. Years. No, it's just having the right systems and the right processes and having, you know, this is exactly what the show's about. It's bear fruit. I had a mentor tell me once, like, go find someone with fruit on the tree and go learn from them. And so that's what I'm doing with Garth. I'm learning from Garth because he's got fruit on the tree within multifamily and his business and his family. And then same with these other guys, Jay Kinder and Michael Reese, you know, now they're chilling. Well, they were chilling in Puerto Rico, you know, making $500,000 a month each. You know, just because of their revenue share and because of their coaching and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, they also killed it when they're actually selling real estate too. And they were the best. And so it's you actually get to learn from the best. And so that it's game changing, life changing. And yeah, so, let's jump into some fun questions and then we'll break it down into some other stuff. So, what's your favorite ice cream?
I have like three, but anything with coffee.
Coffee, like, huh?
Yeah. Coffee and chocolate chips is amazing. Java chips.
Java chips.
And mint chocolate chip. Of course, Oreo is the go-to since junior high.
What what's your favorite show that you guys are watching right now?
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai.
I embarrassingly say that. But, you know, I'm a Karate Kid generation.
Shit.
No, it's this.
It's this one. Sorry.
The crane, man. Gosh.
Best hunt. Tell me about, give me one of your hunting stories.
Oh, with hunting? Oh, like with elk hunting? Yeah. I've had a few of them. But yeah, I would just went up there. I'll tell this one with I had my son when he was like 9 years old. I dragged him out of the tent. We hiked up like 4:30 in the morning. It's really cold. And then we went to this particular spot and the elk, they bugle, you know, the bulls, and that's how you attract them in and stuff. You bugle back, or actually cow. If you can be a sexy cow, and you can get a bull who's in heat coming, mm-hmm. or you're actually trying to be a sexy cow. So we had our pant legs rolled up to like look sexy, and but this bull was just bugling hardcore and was still dark out. And you know, they'll sometimes go over the ridge and away. So I'm like, oh man, I don't want to lose them. So I started, even though it was too dark, but he was way up there, and I didn't want to lose him. So I started cow calling while it was still dark. Well, he ran down the mountain easily a mile.
Oh my gosh.
And, because next thing I know, he's like screaming, just, you know, and just like charging in, and it's, you could barely see, it was barely legal to see. And I have my bow, and then he comes running in, and he's literally like 10 feet from my son and I, but he's on the other side of this spruce tree. So there's like no shot.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking at any point, you know, cause like your scent, they smell really good. It's going to, they
circle around, with around the wind.
And he's going to smell it and he's going to be gone. And, I tried to shoot through the trees and it didn't happen. For some reason, the tree stopped it, you know, like, so dang tree. I have a lot of those stories, but in that same spot, when my son wasn't there, I was able to get one. And a lot of times what they do is, I don't know if this is fun for you guys or not, but it's really, so where you are, like they come down and they'll try to circle and get downwind you so they can, cause they're smart. They want to make sure, are you really a cow?
Yeah.
They'd like to get eyes on, they'd like to get smell on, and then they'll come in. And I knew he was doing that. He was moving around, and you want to be super quiet in the woods. Right. But, anyways, I knew if I just stayed there, he was going to go around and win me and never come in. And so once I knew what he was doing, when he would bugle, I'd cow call. And when he would bugle, I just would sprint as hard as I could for like 50 yards.
Oh my gosh.
And then stop. Cause I didn't want him to hear me, but while he's bugling,
you know, he can't
hear me, right? He's like making noise. And I did that. I probably ran like, you know, 300 yards.
Oh my gosh.
And then I stopped doing any calls. And he walked 20 feet right by me, and I got him the shot. And then of course I hit him, and that's an exhilaration, you know,
mm-hmm.
And, he took off, and then you got to find him, right?
Yes.
They can run 50 to 150 yards, and it was a good shot. But he ran uphill, which is not a good sign. Like, because usually if you have a good shot, like that's hard for them to go uphill. But he was going uphill, and the blood was it was big at first, and it got smaller and smaller, little like pin drops we were finding. And then we were stuck at one spot. We could not find any more blood. And then it was like, oh no, I do not want to lose this animal. That's so sad and waste. You know, nothing goes to waste in the woods. Something's going to eat it, but still, that's just awful. You know, like to kill something and not use the resources. Anyways, my buddy who I was with at the time, Chuck, he was like, well, I'm going to start looking around the woods. I'm like, dude, no, you're breaking the plan. You know, like you got to stay where you are. You mark it and you just do wide circles until you find the next blood. But I'm like, whatever, go look for it. And then he came back and I was still stuck. I hadn't found any more blood. He was standing up like 15 yards from me. And he's like, we should just pray. And I'm like, yeah, that's a great idea. Cause I'm so frustrated. So we just say, God, please help us find this elk. And then, he looked down and he goes, hey, there's some blood.
Oh my gosh.
And it was totally where we wouldn't think it was. He was 15 yards uphill. I thought we were like where the way things looked like with the blood trail that was going this certain way. He was up there. It was like a dime size blood. And it was going, it had started going uphill, which like I said, was a bad thing. But all of a sudden the blood just started picking up, and then he went sideways down along the hill and downhill. And then it was like, there was so much blood. You didn't even have to mark it anymore. It just looked like someone took a bucket of red paint.
Oh my gosh.
Non-hunters. And then you're like, okay, yeah, I think we're going to find this thing. Then I started looking up ahead, and then yeah, like 30, 40 yards down there, I see it was stone cold dead.
Nice.
Night in his the second biggest bull I've ever shot.
Sweet.
So, yeah, it was fun. Then the work starts. You take about 10 minutes to do some photos, and then you start. So it was like, it shot him like at 6 o'clock in the morning, found him around 7 o'clock, took pictures, started working on him, gutting him, butchering him about 7:20. And about 7:30 that night, we were done packing him out.
Dang, that's a full day's work.
12 hours.
Dang.
I mean, hardcore 90-pound packs.
That's awesome. Well, that's awesome. Well, I love a good hunting story, so I think that's
probably good. Too long, but
no, it's perfect. Jump back onto real estate, then we'll jump through some questions. So
yeah.
why are you still buying real estate? Like, it's a seller's market, you know, but why are you still buying real estate?
Yeah, I hit a point a couple of years ago where I was like, you know, I've arrived. I don't really need to do anything more. I can just kind of sit back. And why do I want to do more? But then it was kind of like my daughter was pregnant, and then my son's getting moved back to town, and then my son-in-law. Anyways, I started having my kids, and I could have the vision for my grandkids. Like, hey, there's somebody else that I would love to bless and later in his life and provide more opportunity. And then with my own kids, they expressed an interest in doing it with me. Then that's when I got really excited about building, because it was more than just about me.
Yeah.
And my wife living a good life and enjoying stuff. So then I was like, yeah, I'm still pretty young, and actually I'm having fun with this. Let's do this, you know? And so we just started building. But I think more specifically to answer your question is, why would you want to keep buying in a seller's market? Because inflation. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say we're in hyperinflation scenario, because, you know, across the country, our average rental prices increased 10%. That's big. You know,
yeah. We're
talking about Kansas, Indiana, Ohio, you know, that's mixed into all that. There's other places like out here, it's been 20% or more. That's just due to because the cost of living and stuff, you know, our expenses are going up. Anyways, bottom line is prices have gone up, but rents have gone up. So actually this is the first time in my career. So even though we're paying more dollars, I don't think we're paying more. I think there's deals out there, because I don't think prices have actually caught up with rents.
Really?
Yeah. With where the rents are now. Cause I mean, I've been in this little market for, you know, over 20 years. And you always, like, when you would go to buy something, it would be at the best a break even, if not, like, you had to fund this thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
When you bought a piece of property, so you had to have a creative idea, like to do development or create another unit or, you know, something, or, you know, it's pretty hard to have a cash flowing property. I'm buying properties now. I bought four this last year. We got one more under contract, 30 units. And then you and I are working on 35 units. It's the first time, like, you and I were looking at the property. I don't particularly, the location's great. It's an older unit and stuff. And, but it's like, you can't deny, I have never seen the 1% rule actually be in effect here in Durango.
Yeah.
Where you can buy, if something's 100,000 units, let's say, and the rent's 1,000, that's like a no brainer to start moving forward with that property.
The numbers make sense.
Yeah. And so we're at that ratio with a lot of the properties, with all the properties that we're buying and then some. Like, we're taking it over at that, whatever ratio, like 100-to-1 ratio, with potential to increase to, you know, more than that. So like, you and I are looking at stuff that's more like on $100,000 for every $100,000, you're going to make $1,000, but with the potential to increase that to like $1,400.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's like a 40% increase. Anyways. Lots of cash flow, lots of cash flow.
And yeah.
Let's buy these up.
So you're saying that the rents haven't caught up with the actual prices.
Even
though the prices are higher and inflation, like, I mean, it's almost free money out there, because you have inflation that recorded at 7%. Yeah. And then you have interest rates that are like 4 or 5%. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's free
money.
There's
a lot of money out there. And even though COVID hit a lot of people, also a lot of people, got a lot of money from that.
Yeah.
And there's one of those people, OPM, would be the banks. Banks have a lot of money. They want to lend it. They want to put it to use.
Yep.
And so why not use the bank money?
Interesting.
So,
okay. We'll jump through some questions now. What is the purpose of life, and how did you find it?
Oh, the purpose of life. What did I say last week? well, the purpose of life, I think, what I truly, you know, especially today with everything that's going on in the world with COVID and stuff like that, I think the reality, this stuff that we're doing with money and investing and real estate, it's a great distraction, but it's not life, you know.
Like, mm-hmm.
Real life comes from peace, you know, you know, are you living in peace with yourself and with God and with your family and in the relationships you're in? And I can't always say that I'm at peace, and especially in this environment, but every day I can find that peace. And that's up to me. And that's just with my relationship with God.
Yeah.
So
that alone time you get with him, like, gives you that peace, that rest. I need it
even more now. So,
yeah.
But there's that peace that passes all understanding, right? That's what he promises us. So there's promises of God for all of us, but you have to partner with what he says and what he, you know, I'm not a fate guy. Like, oh, it's your fate, or it's, it was meant to be. Like, that doesn't really exist. I don't believe that exists. There's opportunity. It's like, if you just believe, like, well, there's all this real estate out here and there's great opportunity, hopefully one day one will just fall in my lap. That's not
how it works.
You gotta say, hey, there. You have to partner with the idea of, like, there's opportunity out there and I'm going to go get it.
Yep.
And what's cool about being a Christian, about being a believer, is that, you know, we can pray about these things and have some sort of sense or discernment of, like, well, maybe that's not a good deal, or maybe that is a good deal, or maybe that partnership's not a good deal, or maybe that is a good partnership. You know, and have a little more insight. I honestly don't know how people live their lives without God.
You know, I
feel for them and hope they.
Especially in today's day and age, there's so much unrest and so much unknown and fear in the world. And I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we both have the same belief in knowing Jesus as our Savior. And I think, like you said, that peace, he brings a true peace. And I don't think just R.I.P. should be written on tombstones, right? Like, rest in peace. I think we can actually rest in God's peace every single day, and rest in his promises, rest in his presence. Like, that's what you're talking about. When you can have that, you just become an overflow, and it overflows in the rest of your life. And it's a beautiful thing. So
I found that in, you know, I was raised in a Christian home, like a lot of people, and with that around me, but, you know, I didn't understand it. It took until later on. I was already married and baby on the way, and I didn't have any peace, but I recognized that there's got to be something there that I'm not seeing. And to me, at that point, I thought, well, I've never actually read the Bible from Genesis to maps, and so I'm like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna read the Bible, and then I'm gonna understand this, and then I guess I'll have peace. Well, I started reading through that, and I got so frustrated. You know, because I already thought I knew everything about it. And so I actually got to a point where I got really so mad. I threw my Bible across the room. Like, God, I want to want you, but I don't. That's the first time in my life, in hindsight, that I was actually honest with God and with myself, that I couldn't go get this by myself. I needed God to, you know, it's only through God and through Jesus that you can find that peace. But when I said, I want to want you, you know, I was saying, like, I want to find you, but I don't know how to. So, and I said, and I basically put it in his court, but that's all it takes, is you to ask. We call that prayer.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know it, but that was the first honest prayer of my life. I said, you know, and I basically said, I need your help with this.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, over the next couple of years, people started coming into my life and speaking into my life, and it changed my life. I gave my life over to the Lord, because I never knew him as I knew, you know, I had heard, I just thought God was like fire insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, of course, who wants to go to hell?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that whole concept. So yeah, like, I'll sign up for the fire insurance. Okay. Am I good? Like, it doesn't feel like I'm good. Am I good? Doesn't feel like I'm good. But what I realized is, you know, it says he's got to be your Lord and your Savior, not the one who only saves you. But I submit to him as the authority of my life.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Does it mean I've been perfect? Absolutely. I've made some of the worst mistakes ever. But you know what? I'm still moving with God and towards God. And there is fruit in my family and in my life of that.
So yeah, that's awesome.
We're blessed.
That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Next question is: what is the most difficult decision you've had to make to pursue your destiny?
It was probably after, 2009 crash and going through a bankruptcy, and just, you know, that was very painful, very humbling, humiliating. And then just not being able to take care of my family the way I needed to. And then just trying to dig my way out of that. And I had, you know, like I said, I created a business where, you know, it didn't involve any ownership of real estate or anything like that. But I was able to pay the bills, but then realizing, okay, I could just be like everyone else and pay the bills, but it still is not going to get me where a place of freedom I want to financially and stuff, and to be able to retire. So, but making that leap to go back and do what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what's cool. I prayed about it. I'm like, God, you got to help me. Like, what do I need to do and how do I need to do it? And he really helped me strategize, like, how to do that. Like, you need to start building back your passive income. But I was afraid of failure, right? I'm like, well, I've been doing this for 20 years and look where I'm at now at 40.
Yeah.
But he just, he helped me see how the mistakes I had made. And I actually knew what I'm doing. So I made a couple minor errors, which were huge, but I actually know what I'm doing. And that's what's cool about life is when I had the experience in it. And of course you think I'm 40, it's going to take me another 20 years to rebuild.
No.
So, I mean, I was at a place where I had more freedom than I had the last 7 years before that, or even 10 years before that, in about 2 years.
Hmm. Wow. And it was just a matter of just having that knowledge, and you've done it before. And
refocusing and taking the leap and going, okay, God, I'm going to trust you that you're going to be with me in this. And then just, you know, being wiser about it. You know, there were some deals that I got involved with that I didn't seek in. You know, I think the greed factor gets involved, pride factor, and all those things. So anyways, it's all just one big dress rehearsal.
So. Nice. When do you feel the presence of God the most?
In the mornings when everything's quiet. There's been times in my life where it's been really intense, but yeah, in a general sense, you know, in the mornings is the best time for me.
That's making that routine.
That's when, read my Bible, listen to worship, have that quiet time. My brain's not going crazy yet with all the things I want to get done during the day, or, you know, thoughts about the news and stuff like that. But that's probably the biggest battle right now, right? It's
You
know, waking up and start listening to the news. It's not like that's a bad idea.
Why would you fill your mind with all the lies and just silliness of the news? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree.
Easy to do that.
Yeah, it is. It is. But
if you set that aside and pick up the word of God,
it's
the best. All of a sudden you find peace.
Yeah. It's the best truth you ever get. Yeah. I've definitely made that a part of my routine. It's like the day does not flow as well unless you have that time with God and surrender that day to him and allow it to just, it's his day, you know, and you just acknowledging that and spending time with him and in his word and letting his word, you know, speak to you and him speak to you. And yeah, there's something powerful about how the rest of the day happens after that. So yeah, I agree.
You know, I actually think that like being an entrepreneur is a creative Holy Spirit God thing.
Hmm. Tell me, what do you mean by that?
So like you see that in, my old pastor shared that with me. I think it's in Exodus 31 when the Israelites, they had just gotten out, you know, they'd been slaves for 400 years and they come out of slavery. What do you know how to do as a slave? Well, all they knew how to do was manual labor and make some mud bricks.
Yeah.
And that was the main thing they did. But it says the Holy Spirit came on this certain tribe and gave them creative abilities for skills and craftsmanships and all that. And then what they did is that's when they created all the stuff that God had given the strategy to build the temple.
Yeah.
Which was a place where the presence of God came. So
interesting.
It's a real, I've always thought that was fascinating because I think that, you know, that we could live by the same thing because God gives us skills and creative ability to create wealth, to create a place where, you know, God's presence can be. Because he loves to partner with us. He's not just ruling and running the world. He wants to rule and run the world with him.
Yeah.
You know? So, and you know, if you use your money wisely, you know, money is just a tool.
It's exactly what it is.
Could your wealth create a place where the presence of God is, where people can get out of bondage? They can, you know, there's all you could dream with that. You know,
yeah.
Right. And that, anyways, that's why. I love entrepreneurship because you're creating something out of nothing. You're creating wealth out of nothing. And that, to me, that's a God thing. I mean, to say that it takes money to make money. I don't believe that. Yeah. It takes somebody's money, but it doesn't, you know, you can have no money. It's been proven over and over.
Yeah.
And become, you know, wealthy.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think that's really cool.
I like that a lot, actually. That's cool. I'm gonna have to read on that. I like that. So what advice would you give to your younger self?
Don't sell. Yeah.
Like never sell like any real estate, like residential, well, or like, what do you mean?
The little hotel I just sold, my wife and I, we talk about it almost every day. Like, so glad we sold that. It was great. It was a blessing for 7 years, but it was nice to move on to something a little more passive. It was,
yeah.
That's what got us out of the hole. It was such a huge blessing. Mm-hmm. Multifamily and long-term rentals is where I want to focus my attention. But yeah, for the most part, there was stuff in my younger years. Cause you think when you're younger, like, oh, I did this deal. It was an amazing deal. I can do it as many times as I want.
Yeah.
I went through, 10, 20 years where it was really hard to find deals. Now I probably wasn't looking the right way or whatever, cause there's always deals. Right. But my point is like, you only need to do one good deal.
One good deal to kind of launch the rest.
Yeah. And so there's a couple of deals that I had sold and we thought, well, we made a lot of money doing it. But if I would have just held those properties for these last 20 plus years and did nothing else, I'd be worth more on paper.
Yeah.
Do I regret becoming a real estate agent? Absolutely not. I mean, the people, the experiences and all that I learned, so.
Yeah.
But if I could have told my younger self, like, no, don't sell that.
Yeah.
Get your real estate license and do both like I'm doing now.
Yeah.
So that would have been the way to go.
Nice.
So younger self, do that. When I'm going to get in the time machine, I'll tell you here in a little bit.
Awesome. All right. Here we are for the last question. Why are the best lessons often take the longest to learn? Like what's with that? Like,
well, it's kind of like the best food you eat. It takes a long time to cook, kind of slow cook it.
Mm.
I think the best lessons are learned through perseverance and experience.
Yeah.
You always want your kids and for yourself to learn from others, and the wise ones of us do.
Yeah. But
you really learn it when you go through it.
When
yourself.
You go do it yourself. Yeah.
And yeah, you don't want that for your kids, but, as we all know, if you go through something and you persevere and you come out the other side, that is, you've learned it forever.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I think you're exactly right. I say for you to go through bankruptcy and for you to understand like how to lose everything and to come and to take that same knowledge that you have and recreate everything and do better within the 2-3 years. Like that's amazing. So that's, you're right.
Yeah. And some people say, to be successful, you need to fail, half a dozen times or whatever. I don't think you have to, but you can definitely learn from it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you definitely, failure is just a mindset. I believe failure is just a stepping stone to your greatness. It's just how you look at it. Right. Yeah. I mean, I always have the saying is I never lose, either I win or I learn. Right. Yeah. And so if you,
exactly right. I kind of say the same thing. So if I've lost money, there was particular development deals. It was money lost, but on the other hand, it was also a really expensive education.
That's not
the first time people have paid for education.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I appreciate your time today, Garth.
You're welcome.
As always. Yeah. If someone's looking to do a deal with you or us, how would they get a hold of you? What's the best way?
You could email me at garth.schulteis@exprealty.com.
Yep.
My name should be on the screen there. And that's easy. Same with Kyle. You could contact Kyle. My phone number also is 970-759-4930. If you'd like to text or call me. But just know that if you call me and I don't know who you're on my phone, I'm not going to pick up. So leave a message.
That's fair.
Because if you don't leave a message, then you automatically are a spam call and I'm not going to try to see who you are. So just FYI.
Awesome. Well, hey, we appreciate everybody. Give a comment, give a share, give a like. Let us know what you think, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Adios.